Okay, so I'm actually sitting in for Alf Jean Noodleman, who unfortunately couldn't be here. She plays a national role within our organization in helping to co-lead the community health needs assessment and the implementation strategy work across our hospitals. So and I have nothing to disclose. So I wanted to start off the presentation by really giving kind of a high-level snapshot of what the ACA is asking for, excuse me, in terms of hospitals being able to develop their implementation strategies. So as Pam mentioned, every 3 years, hospitals not only have to do a needs assessment, but they have to have a fairly robust plan on how they plan to actually address the needs that come up through the needs assessments and the needs that they actually decide to select. So hospitals have to, in this process, they would have to develop criteria and processes that really explicitly state how they got to a health need that they selected for the hospital. They have to list those health needs. They have to develop strategies that address those needs, including a statement about how those strategies impact population health and what their quote-unquote anticipated impact is in the community. And they also have to provide a rationale for the needs that they did not select, so why hospitals chose certain needs over others. For Kaiser Permanente, both our hospitals and non-hospital areas follow these requirements. As a matter of practice, we had done assessments in some capacity across our regions. In the state of California, we were following state regulations for needs assessments for a long time, but in our other regions, these regulations did not occur, and for all the reasons that Pam said in terms of alignment and really getting our organization kind of staged for how we address community health, we had decided to allow other hospitals to do this as well. And they also developed implementation strategies. So these strategies have to go into a document that's filed with the IRS. Per state in the state of California, it has to be filed with OSHPD. So we have a state regulatory body as well as a national regulation body that governs this. As well, these strategies all have to be adopted by the governing board of our organization. So beyond the regulations, I wanted to just really kind of share that the ACA for us wasn't just a new mandate, and especially in the state of California, it wasn't just a new mandate beyond you know the state mandate that was already there. I think what the ACA really is intending to do is to get health systems really staged and prepared for population health planning. So I'm putting here on the first kind of part of this slide is a working definition by the Institute of Medicine that defines population health as the health outcomes of groups of individuals, including the distribution of such outcomes within the group. So while not, this is not a kind of an explicit part of the definition, it's understood that such population health outcomes are the product of multiple determinants of health, including medical care, public health, genetics, behavior, social factors, and environmental factors. So you'll notice a couple of things here. I think you'll notice that these definitions and other similar definitions are really starting to kind of align in how we're starting to talk about community health. It's talking about health outcomes and their determinants, and those determinants, I think, are more and more starting to share the same language: environments, behaviors, socioeconomic factors, and clinical care. And I think the other two things that were really important here for us was that as we were starting to stage both our needs assessments and our planning, we had in mind who these groups of individuals and populations were that we were trying to be accountable towards, and how were we actually thinking about the multiple determinants using the buckets that Pam went over. The second quote here is by a paper that was put together by LA County Department of Public Health and the Public Health Institute. I have the citation on the bottom, but I put it up here because while, it again, this is not part of the regulations, what has really occurred since the ACA has passed is that we've had a lot of really national partners really getting engaged on helping hospitals define what their role could be in this sphere. So this quote is again, really, I think, I won't read it in detail, but it's what it's really stating is that we do need to be accountable, and accountability for population health is not just the role of, you know, traditional public health departments, but that clinical care, including public health departments and other non-government agencies, are really co-accountable for this. And there's a lot of effort being put into how do we start to think about frameworks of how we can work together and measure our efforts towards this goal. This is a map from our CHNA platform, and I'm including this here because I think it can give you an example of how we're moving away from, moving towards how we're starting to define our populations. So as a healthcare system, population can mean very different things depending on which part of the health system we're looking at. But in general, for us as a health system, our populations are our members and our patients, and that's really the group that we focus on. As we're moving towards really playing a more and more accountable role towards population health, we're really starting to define population based on a geographic unit. So this slide is showing one of our hospital areas, which is our Anaheim service area, and it's showing the boundaries in purple. I know it's a little bit light here on the slide, and how it's nestled within the broader county the boundary. When we look at our data, we've attempted where the data allowed us to be able to roll up the data at the service area. So we're able to see, you know, what a specific data rate would look like for a hospital, and compare that to the county, and then compare that to the state. And I think these comparisons are allowing us to actually take a look at the data in a more focused way and be able to value them in a different way. This is just another slide showing how we're starting to use data to stage us for planning. So we're organizing our data along the buckets. On the left-hand side of the slide, you see the different buckets that we talked about in terms of the determinants of health. On the right side is showing an example that when we look at data, we're not just looking at one indicator at a time. We're looking at clusters of indicators that can allow us to see what's really occurring in the community and be able to really kind of stage us for what do we need to focus on. So in this case, it will be taking a look at not just diabetes outcomes, but the health behaviors, environments, clinical care, and other factors that might be contributing towards that diabetes rate. When we're presenting our data, we started to do this a little bit differently. In the past, we had these very, very long CHNA reports, which in some of our hospitals are still very long. But in the past, it used to be really kind of a data report. It was indicator after indicator with tables and nicely presented graphs that showed all the indicators in the community. And to be quite honest with you, it was very difficult to make sense of what this data really meant in terms of where our priority focus should be and how we can plan for it. So as we thought about how we could do this differently, we started to actually organize our data in a different way to be able to tell the story of community health. We started to talk about not just the data, but as well as creating a summary of what that issue means in the community, talking about its associated drivers, what the disparities look like in the community, which subpopulations and geographies are experiencing this health issue more adversely than others. We incorporated a lot of our qualitative data into these reports. As part of our process, we not only have to look at statistical data, but we also have to speak to community stakeholders and bring in that community voice into the needs assessment. So we integrated the two into kind of a snapshot, for example, around diabetes and what is diabetes in the community, what's driving it, what is the community saying about it, you know, what does our data say about it, and as well, what are the assets in the community that can really kind of help us in terms of partnerships and being able to leverage or invest in that could really address the issue. So this is a very high-level snapshot of how we've organized the data based on what I just talked about. So we would include our maps that would take a look at, for example, our diabetes discharge rates. And in this map, and this map is an example of our Los Angeles Medical Service area. So we're able to see areas within that service area that actually are maybe have greater need in terms of this issue. And again, we're only looking at one indicator of you know, diabetes discharge, and again, at a high level, but we're able to see whether that discharge rate is different than the county, what could be contributing to it based on what our community stakeholders are saying to us, and who might be more adversely affected by it. As we started to present this data, we really started to reflect on who should be looking at it. Typically, this process has been a process that's been nested within our community benefit department that rests within our hospital systems. And our community benefit departments are very mighty but very small, and they're tasked with really working very, very kind of deliberately with their consultants and identifying needs and developing strategies. But we didn't want this process just to be a process that rested within community benefits. So we wanted a deliberate way of including a broader set of stakeholders that we can bring to the table. So this slide shows an example of the types of stakeholders we actually brought to the table in this last round. And I listed these here not to just to show that we're kind of growing out of community benefit into the broader organization through this process, but that these set of stakeholders are used to seeing data. They're not stakeholders that are just on the operations side and not interested in data. They're interested in data, but they've been interested in data in a very different way. They've looked at health services data or member data. We're a very data-driven organization, but this was really the first opportunity for them to take a look at our community data, our community health data in a different way for their own service area. So part of what we were trying to really stage ourselves for is with the CHNA is to have a hospital catchment area that is able to show community health data that they would be able to compare and contrast to the member data that they have for their own hospitals. And we got very good anecdotal information from some of our hospital leaders really taking a look at this data and saying, what's really going on here? You know, do our own members, you know, reside in these areas? What can we learn about our members in this way? And what can we do together to really be able to address the broader community health needs? Our implementation strategy process went to different stages. We started off with going through a process of selecting health needs, developing health improvement goals, reviewing the evidence, developing the strategies, and then describing the measures for monitoring, and then completing the reports and submitting them to the IRS. So very kind of a fairly linear process that we went through. I wanted to just touch upon a couple of the process steps. This is a list of the criteria that we use for selection. We were, again, this was part of the ACA regulations that we would have to use the criteria-based decision-making as we went into the health needs selection of our process. So we looked at needs in terms of their magnitude and scale, how severe they were, whether there were disparities, whether we had assets to bear that we could leverage to address it, and whether there was an ability to leverage it beyond just our assets. You know, how are we able to work with our partners to be able to do this? Pam mentioned to you in her presentation that we were using evidence-based snapshots to help our hospitals be able to really develop and identify more robust strategies for identifying needs. So this is a more kind of a close-up snapshot of our obesity overweight topic issue. And as you can see, we included in the bold, we kind of try to match the way we presented strategies to the way we presented data. We used that same population health framework of the clinical drivers, the behavioral drivers, the environmental drivers to organize our data and stage it for planning. So in this case, when we went through the list of the evidence-based resources, we actually organized this in what does the evidence say in terms of us being able to improve access through environmental availability or be able to impact behaviors or be able to work with clinical care systems to improve on the same issue. And as well, we included information here on evidence-informed goals. We extracted this information from the same sources that we looked at for the strategies. And this was really intended to get our hospitals to be very conscientious about what their strategies were intending to do. And we're starting to kind of build a common language around outcomes and goals that we really didn't have in the past. Again, this is a list, I think Pam went through it, but just for your reference, of the types of source documents that we looked at for our evidence base. And again, another example of how our hospitals started to write their strategies. So our strategies were nestled within our long-term intermediate outcomes and goals, and as well as more of the really more approximate, I think, outcomes that we thought our strategies were focusing on. So this is an example from Colorado. It's a grant-making strategy that's intended to increase access to daily recommended levels of physical activity. And really the main expected outcome here is that children who are exposed to this activity are able to get the recommended daily minutes of physical activity, but it's really tied to a broader long-term goal of increasing access to affordable healthy foods and expanded opportunities to lead physically active lifestyles. So we're able to really start to align how our strategies are leading towards population health outcomes. We're in the kind of the beginning stages of that. The types of strategies that we've typically used in our community benefit portfolio have consisted of grants. We're a funder of nonprofit organizations and partners in the community. We do these at different levels, at a regional level as well as at the hospital level. And we also have a number of programs that we leverage and we fund internally, and they're all implemented in the community. So this example is from San Diego, and it has a long-term goal of San Diego and how it aims to reduce obesity, overweight, and type 2 diabetes. And these are examples that they use in their strategies to identify how through a grant-making strategy and a program strategy they're able to do that. And as well, they've included strategies that are focusing on the partnership and assets. Pam had mentioned that this was a very, very deliberate kind of a formula that we were using with our hospitals, that we didn't want them just to talk about strategies at a high level, but really start to talk about them in these four types. And we want to more and more not only be able to rely on our grants and programs, but be able to identify ways that we can leverage our assets and partnerships. So as we're thinking about the work ahead, we have these sets of strategies in place that are really within our systems, and I think our next steps is to figure out how to better design these strategies with each other so that we can address the needs better and get to better outcomes. And I think this thinking is going to take us, again, beyond just our community benefit portfolio to how our overall organization operates and works with each other to be able to address this. And we're having some very, very neat conversations in our regions and across our hospitals around this. And part of this discussion, I think, is going to not just look within the system, but how do we start to think about our work across systems with other entities? So it's like these different types of strategies that are happening, not just within Kaiser Permanente, but how are they actually occurring across other entities within the same population group? So I wanted to just kind of end with some of the successes and learnings and takeaways for us. We've had a lot of alignment in terms of our approach and language across our hospitals. We're using a new framework. We're starting to practice how to use that framework. I think in the next stages, we're going to be practicing it more and thinking about how do we actually start to speak the same language when we're talking about population health. We're surfacing really new and emerging needs, as Pam had stated, and we're anticipating that, you know, these needs are going to take a different lens for us in terms of being able to identify ways that we can address it. And I think these new and emerging needs really surface because of the methodology that we had in place for CHNA. We've had these needs come up in our needs assessments in the past, but they weren't needs that our hospitals felt comfortable addressing. So part of it had to do with the methodology, and I think part of it had to do with the fact that we're in this era of really being able, with an ACA, to be able to really reduce costs, get to better outcomes, get to better patient satisfaction, recognizing that we can't do that just in a clinical care delivery model, that we have to kind of think about mental health and other related issues that can help our members and the broader community. We're more intentional about community engagement, where we didn't have them involved in the prioritization process with our needs in the past. We've actually been involving them, and in the next stages, we're thinking about how to involve them better during the planning stage. We're making better use of the evidence base, as we've mentioned before. We're being a lot more intentional about how we're leveraging our KP assets and partnerships. We're developing outcomes and metrics. And we're really starting to kind of stimulate really deep thinking about Kaiser Permanente's role. And there's a whole new set of language that we're actually starting to use in this sphere that, you know, we're not just in the state of delivering healthcare, but we're really in the state of delivering health. And it's a nuanced language, but I think it's an important kind of distinction to make. And our leaders are starting to use this language, and in their communication to us, they're starting to use this language. So we're definitely in the kind of the cusp of a kind of a new era of how we're starting to redefine ourselves. And in that redefinement, we're being mindful that as much as we've been really partnering with our partners through our investments and other partnerships, we need to be even more deliberate with identifying the partners that are co-accountable for the same populations. And so I think it's through that kind of co-accountable lens that we're going to be moving some of the work forward. Thank you.